Hi, everyone. I'm Emily Crow, multimedia editor at Progressive Grocer. Welcome to Top Women in Grocery, a podcast focused on the trends, topics, and interests moving women forward in grocery retail. We're spotlighting extraordinary women in the grocery industry who have had successful careers and interesting lives, and who are also making a positive impact in their workplaces and in their communities. Today, we're joined by Annie Streit, Chief Sales Officer at Daily Harvest. Annie joined Daily Harvest with more than 20 years of experience driving category growth and organizational transformation at companies including General Mills, and now has the unique distinction of guiding the sustainably sourced fruit and veggie-focused startup into the grocery channel. We're here today to discuss Daily Harvest's expansion into the grocery channel, Annie's career progression, her pioneering journey into remote work, and so much more. Annie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Emily. This is going to be great.
I'm excited. Well, to start, I'm hoping you can tell us a little bit about your career journey and how you landed in your current role with Daily Harvest.
Of course. You called it right from the beginning. So I did start my career at General Mills. I was there 17 years, and something that I appreciate looking back on that time is because General Mills is such a big organization, I had the opportunity to do really deep roles in sort of every function of sales, category and trade and analytics, and lots of time in field selling teams. And that really set me up to be successful when I made a move to go smaller. So in 2016, I moved to Amplify Snacks, which Skinny Pop Popcorn is the hallmark brand. And I started there in a role where I was pulling together a sales strategy. So using all of those skills that I had built at General Mills and starting out some things that the company needed as they were scaling, like S&OP processes or trade management. And over time and through a Hershey acquisition, had the opportunity to get back to the customer, which is a role that I love, and ended there leading sort of our national sales teams. And that then set me up to go to Cora, where I had my first head of sales role. And Cora is an incredible mission-driven natural and organic femcare company. And one of the things that I really wanted to learn there was that they were D2C first. And so that was my first exposure to thinking through how does that channel operate differently? How do you manage that inside of a broader strategy, which turned out to be critical when I got the opportunity to come here to Daily Harvest. And so I've been here 2 years and really have been leading our foray into an omni-channel world.
Wonderful. And I mentioned before the grocery channel growth for Daily Harvest that happened last year with the company's expansion and partnership with Kroger. What can you tell me about that transition, and why was Kroger the right partner for it?
Oh, thank you for asking the question. You know, our mission has always been at Daily Harvest to make it really easy to eat more fruits and vegetables every day that were sustainably grown. Even post-COVID, only 16% of consumers are willing to subscribe to food services online.
Interesting.
That's 84% of consumers that we can't reach, and 97% shop in a grocery store at some point. And I really want to know where those other 3% get their food.
What are they doing?
And so that made an extension into an omni-channel approach, just the natural next step in our mission to make it even easier for consumers to get more fruits and veg. You asked too, why was Kroger the right first partner? And I would say it was really three things. One is just an incredible team of people there who were as dedicated and as excited about the mission as we were. We first met Holly, Adrian, Jason Milburn, Megan Barton, and since Joey and Brennan, who have helped us kind of take this brand into that next level. And they knew we had a lot to learn, a lot of different ways that we wanted to show up on the shelf. And because they are so committed to having fresh available to their customers, they were really excited to lean in with us and learn how to do it in a frozen way. And so I would say the people there made it a natural yes. Second is that as a company that did start to direct consumer first, we really, really want to know our consumer. And Kroger's got incredible data that would allow us to understand how our shopper was engaging with our brand, how many units they were purchasing, were they purchasing across categories? A lot of things that were really going to be essential in our ability to serve them well over the course of our launch period. And last but equally important is Kroger really has an incredible suite of tools so that we could guarantee our velocities. We're going to be strong. We're going to perform well for them. And those tools really helped us right out of the gates drive trial and then in turn drive repeat back into the brand and get the key learnings along the way.
Awesome. So speaking of those key learnings, I'm kind of curious what Daily Harvest has learned since that launch at retail, both on the business side and the consumer side. It was a big step.
It was a big step. We learned a couple of things that were very confirming. So our customer in grocery tends to shop very similarly to our customer in our direct-to-consumer business in that they buy a large number of units each trip that they make. They make pretty frequent trips. So our trip frequency is actually 2x the category. Okay. That's very similar in terms of like, gosh, if fruit and veg are a daily habit, right? You're coming back to shop pretty frequently. And we have incredibly high repeat. The other thing that I would say we've discovered is attributes really matter. And so our food, because it is organic fruits and vegetables, naturally meets a ton of attributes that meet a ton of different consumer goals. So our food is vegan, it is gluten-free, it is dairy-free. And those attributes really do matter to the grocery consumer, just like they matter to our direct consumer.
That's interesting. Great. Well, you and I talked previously, and you mentioned that Daily Harvest has the luxury of complicated food. And I absolutely love that phrase. So I'm hoping you can explain to us what that means and how you and Daily Harvest have learned to convey that to customers.
Oh, I so appreciate this question. The funny thing about our food is actually incredibly simple. Mm-hmm. Our recipes are organic fruits and veg, which is very straightforward in its proposition. But there is a lot that we do that's complex behind the scenes to deliver on that food for our customers. And so that could be everything from our sustainable farming practices and the one-to-one relationships we have with our farmers. We have been recognized at Expo a couple of years for the Almond Project, which is a commitment across manufacturers to test conventional farming practices, regenerative, conventional, organic, and regenerative organic in different plots of land across a 5-year time period to really put some science behind why we believe regenerative is materially different in how we grow our food and good for the planet. I would also say, you know, our food does bring a variety of fruits and veg. And so one of our top items is our mint and cacao smoothie. Consumers may not be as familiar with all of the different fruits and veg that are in that. Even if you think about mint and cacao, right? Our website gives a quick nod to tastes like mint chocolate chip ice cream. I may not know that I love mint and cacao, but I know I love mint chocolate chip ice cream. And so really our website also does an incredible job showing like, what is in the food? What does the food look like prepared? And so I would say we've really taken that as a key learning of our packaging has to do all of that hard work for us in retail. Yeah. And what we launched with, because one of the reasons we felt like we were ready for retail was our 40% brand awareness, we launched with something that looked very much like our D2C packaging with relatively minor changes. What we've learned is our packaging and grocery, one, has to differently communicate the hierarchy of our benefits. So one of our recent launches was pasta. Our pasta is gluten-free. That's a differentiator in the category. And so making sure the packaging calls that out loudly and clearly. Two is really adding those taste cues to the packaging. So we have now included on our packaging tastes like mint chocolate chip ice cream. We've also included images of our beautiful finished recipes cooked so that the consumer can imagine what it's going to look like as they're eating it. And we've also created a digital link. So we do have QR codes on our packaging that when our consumers want to engage with us and learn more about how we grow our food, all they have to do is click the QR code and be brought into that same brand experience that our direct-to-consumer customers have enjoyed.
It's a lot to ask of brand packaging, but it sounds like you've kind of found the key to it.
We have through iteration. Yes.
Sure. Sure. You mentioned a lot of new initiatives for Daily Harvest this year. What are some of those and what are you most excited for?
New packaging is obviously one.
Yes.
Rolling out next
big
quarter.
Step. Sure.
Big step. I would say too, is we do have some incredible innovation. So we're just coming off of Expo West, mm-hmm. where we were sampling our pops. Think of that as a smoothie in a portable format. So it's a frozen pop ready to go, made from organic purees. So it keeps the sugar lower. I would also say pasta has been an incredible launch right out of the gates. So it is one of our top rated collections. It has clearly met an unmet consumer need with delicious taste, but in a gluten-free way. Mm-hmm. And so we do have some innovation that I can tease that's coming down the pipeline to extend that. And that launch coming into retail is also really exciting. Mm-hmm. And then you'll see us continue to expand our retail format. So we obviously launched with Kroger. We've since mm-hmm. added a number of great partners like Wegmans or New Seasons. We just announced that we launched our first Costco smoothie pack about two weeks ago, and you'll see us continue to expand to additional regions as that has been wildly successful right out of the gates. And then by the time we kind of close 2024, we'll have a launch in each major channel. And so I think our ability to expand accessibility to our customers is really the thing that I'm the most excited about.
Great. Well, switching gears, we also talked previously about your career progression and totally switching gears about how that was affected by personal choices regarding your family. This is something that I was very interested in hearing about, and I think our audience will be interested in hearing about as well. How did you work through those personal choices and changes in your career? And what did you learn from making those choices that put your family first?
Oh, Emily, I so appreciate the sensitivity of your question. Thank you.
It's a big one. Again,
it is a big one. Yeah. And family is always a hard left, but so integrated with our careers. Mm-hmm. So in 2013, we adopted our niece. Her parents were killed in a small plane accident. And so she came as an 8-year-old girl to join our family, which at the time was a 5-year-old and a 1.5-year-old boy, and my husband and I. And gosh, you can imagine as a child impacted by that kind of trauma, what a major shift that was in our household dynamics.
For everybody.
For everybody. I will say I am so grateful to this day for an incredible mentor and boss at the time, Kevin Greer. You know, at first I was so overwhelmed by this change that I called him and I was like, I'm not sure that I can continue to do my work in the way that I would want to do it and raise this family. And he truly encouraged me to take a pause, take a leave of absence, consider how these things might be integrated. And at the end of that pause, I came back so excited and so motivated to do the work that I love in addition to leading the family that I love. And so I would say the things that I've learned from that time on a personal note, one, I really learned to meet people where they are today. So on any given day, the needs in my household looked really different. Some days were really sad and required a lot of nurturing and care. And some days were joyful and were about family connection and family hilarity. And so really just accepting the moment as it is was the key personal lesson that I took. And that shows up in how I manage my teams day to day, because you don't know what's going on in someone's household on any given moment. So take what they're giving you, believe it, and respond accordingly. And then on the work note, you know, that did put a pause in my career for a period of time. We made a commitment when we adopted our niece that we would stay here in Texas. That's where I live today, is in Austin. And the reason we made that commitment is that she had aunts and uncles and grandparents and a wider surround network here that we wouldn't have had anywhere else if I had continued to move. And so that really, for me, taught me the lesson of progress does not always have to mean promotion. It can mean, okay, I've been in this job for a period of time now, and I need to continue to learn new skills. So maybe it's about learning how to contingency plan differently. Because when things are on the upswing, right, you've got to have new levers to pull. Maybe it means creating new opportunities. And so I was on the AGB team, sales team at General Mills for a really long time. And in that time, I learned to iterate and create new things like with my team and with other manufacturers, a great box tops event that then the next year we took the next level by establishing DSD that didn't exist in our networks or with our customer. And I would say now I use those skills a ton, both in teaching my teams how to think through those things, but also in actually applying the practices myself before they're needed. And I wouldn't have had the opportunity to get that learning if I hadn't been in that job for a period of time that forced it. And so I would say those are the two things that I really learned on a personal note, thinking through meeting people where they are exactly in this moment. Mm-hmm. And on a work note, learning how to continue to be curious to progress your career, even when you're not necessarily in a time of high change, right, from a title standpoint.
Yeah. I liked how you said accepting the moment as it is. I think that's something we can all carry with us and just say, you know, things aren't easy right now and we're going to work with it and we're going to move forward.
I think that's true.
I like that a lot. Well, switching gears again. Fun fact that I learned about you is that you are one of the pioneers of remote work. Can you share your journey into both working and leading teams remotely and perhaps share a few pearls of wisdom about making the most of working from home? I'd like to add, you heard my dogs barking right before this started. So it's always a struggle, but here we are.
It is so true. And I'm so glad that it happens to the professionals too. What a joy.
Makes me feel better too.
So I would say I was very, very fortunate. General Mills was a great employer. And as I really, you know, was in one location for a long time, they were able to work with me and a handful of others to create a remote role where we were leading teams that were doing category work or trade work for regional customers remotely. And so I had teams living here in Austin that were based over time in Scottsdale and Minneapolis and Tampa. And I would just travel to the teams when I could to get that critical in-person time. But a lot of my team and my time was spent learning to lead that team remotely. Mm-hmm. And I did pick up a couple of tricks that I still use today. And I would say at Daily Harvest, our incredible team is based in New York City. Mm-hmm. We have a very active and vibrant office there. And I still use those skills leading remotely here in Austin. And so the couple of things that I would give advice to anyone starting this journey is, one, speak up and be present. So Zoom meetings, yes, they are fatiguing. Yes, there are some limitations, right, versus in-person interaction, but the more that your voice can be heard, the more that you're not multitasking, that you are as engaged in the conversation as you would be if you were one-on-one in a room together, mm-hmm. The more impactful your presence can be remotely, and the more people will remember to include you in those hallway conversations. So if they know that I'm going to have an opinion on something and they meet in the hallway, you know, they're more likely to say, hey, let's dial Annie in because I think she's going to have an opinion on this. And so being willing to speak up and have that voice remotely is critical. I would say too is be really open. And so one of the things that you know, might see about me if we were in person together is you might see that my face looks incredibly tired, or you might see that I have on really terrible socks with the wrong shoes, right? And those might be context clues that maybe I'm having a rough day.
Sure.
In the absence of those context clues, I really encourage my teams and I myself am just very open from the get-go. So you and I might start a call together and I might say, oh my gosh, I had the worst night of sleep last night. I am exhausted. So if I'm coming in hot, you know, take it with a grain of salt. But just giving those clues verbally, I think, becomes really important in remote work because it does tell you where I am in this moment. Mm-hmm. And you're giving me a gift if you're willing to do the same. And then the last thing that I would say is it's really important in a work setting to provide context for the things that you're asking and then transparency on why it matters. So something that can be absorbed in an office environment is just the general ethos of the moment, right?
Yeah.
Is the company a high growth moment? Are there strains on supply and you're hearing whispers from operations teams in the background? You know, are you in a high growth mode where it's really about what's the next resource that you need to build? Those things are felt when you're in an office. And so you can naturally ask for a piece of work, right, without the context, because the context is being absorbed. But I think the importance of in a remote environment saying, hey, I've got this particular ask of you. This is why in the moment that ask is really important, because it ties to this one of our objectives, or it ties to this particular constraint we have to meet those objectives. And then on the back end of that, closing the loop to say, thanks so much for doing this thing. This was the impact that it had, and this is how it's showing up in the metrics and the results. The importance of taking those two extra steps to provide the context and then provide the results, it's just twice as important as in a remote environment as it is when everyone is in person and you're absorbing the room.
Sure. It almost sounds like it's slightly more complicated adding those explanations and all that kind of stuff, but it's critical when you're in that remote role to sort of even stand up for yourself and say, this is what I need. This is why I need it. I'm here. Please help me.
Yes. And Emily, what I have found is when I give that context, the upfront might be a little bit more work.
Sure.
But the work that I get back in return is 10 times the work that it would be without the context, because I don't know everything. There are things that my team members know. There are things that my cross-functional partners know, where if they've got the context, they can deliver work that is 10 times better than what I'm specifically asking for, because they can give me that and then some. And so I do think the upfront might take a little bit more, but what you get in return is also a whole lot more.
That's really interesting. I hadn't thought about it that way. Great. Well, you've already given us some wonderful advice, but I'm curious if you have anything else you'd like to add for women in today's grocery industry.
You know, I've thought about this a lot because every woman's journey looks different. My journey looks a lot different right now than it did in that time period 10 years ago when I was adopting to new things in my family. And so as I was thinking about what advice I might give, I was really trying to think of advice that would be relevant no matter the career stage or no matter the personal stage that you might be in. And so I would say, you know, the three things that have consistently served me in my career have been: one, stay curious; two, take the calculated risk; and three, surround yourself with other people that are doing the same. Because when you can create that network and that community, one, it's so much more fun. And two, you know, you get the benefit of other people's learning too. And you also might get to share something that matters every once in a while, just like you've given me the opportunity to do today.
Wonderful. I love that. Well, Annie, thank you so much for sharing your very deep insights and being with us here today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Right back at you, Emily. This was so much fun. Thank you.
Of course. For more information about the Top Women in Grocery podcast, please visit www.progressivegrocer.com/podcasts. You can also subscribe to this series wherever you typically listen to podcasts, including on Apple, Google, and Spotify. Finally, do you have an idea for a Twig podcast topic? I'd love to hear from you. Shoot me an email at ecrow@ensembleiq.com. See you next time, and thanks so much for listening.